From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fifth day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll discuss the harvest progress that has now been stalled across the Corn Belt with the first wave of rainfall and how long it will last. A hint, 10 days, says Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible. We'll take that up with him during the show, and we'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon as well, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Is it rainy where you are today?
It's been raining since about 7:30, Todd. Probably the first good rain we've had in about 2 months.
Well, that'll be welcomed, relatively speaking, though farmers sometimes are thinking, I'd rather get my crop out at this point than to have rain, especially if they're thinking there will be a lot of rain. We had 2.4, at least I did, overnight in my own gauge, and I had more after that this morning. My wife called and said that she was getting a gully washer. I don't know what amount that was, but it sure looks like there's going to be a lot of rain, and that's going to make a difference. And I guess it made a difference in Chicago today as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the trade finally caught up with the soybean complex, especially with the idea that, you know, having only 23% of the beans harvested and 26% of the corn harvested is not going to look very good if these weather models are correct. And I think probably on the weather front, the European model, which has been more accurate in my view anyway, this summer and spring and early fall, is actually wetter in Iowa and Nebraska and in Kansas. And I think that's where maybe the trade wanted to focus its attention on more. And I think basically beans were probably playing catch up today. We saw the meal kick into higher gear. It was the percent leader on the day, especially with the soy meal being purchased this morning by the Philippines. That was a nice purchase. Suggests we're getting some additional Southeast Asian demand from other livestock producers. And you know, the other thing that's happened too, Todd, that kind of snuck up on us is the Brazilian currency and the Argentine currencies have been rallying here pretty nicely. The Brazilian real is up about 10% since the end of the month. So you had all these things kind of laying in the background. Bean oil had rallied substantially off its lows, about 10-12% since the mid-September lows and with the crude oil rally. So I think beans were kind of in the pole position with all this underlying support from these different news stories and fundamentals.
You mentioned Brazil, and I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know whether you followed or not, but of course they've got a presidential election coming up Sunday, I believe. I'm wondering if the market is fearful of this election there or not, and what impact that may or may not have.
Yeah, I mean, he's a populist, and I haven't dug a lot. I haven't done a lot of detailed analysis on him. He is a populist, and he is making a lot of promises. And I think you probably have a good point to be made that the currency is certainly liking the idea of him winning, and that would allow them to be able to get more out of debt and give them a leg up when it comes to the economic front and the financial front. And it'd be a welcome change is what the currency markets are suggesting right now. As far as the agriculture policy, I don't think I've seen too much on it. But if he's a populist and he talks about helping the producers, the agriculture producers, much like President Trump, you know, that might be a factor, especially when we come back from the long weekend. It'll be geopolitics will be a very big player next week because we're also sailing some big Navy ships into the South China Sea after China got real close to one of our ships in international waters this week. So we're going to have to play that one very, very closely as far as both what's going on in China and Brazil and a couple other countries. Brexit is going to be another big deal coming down the pike in terms of how the currency markets handle, you know, when the British actually leave the European Union financially. So those are all out there along with the USDA report next week. And then you have the E15 announcement too. So we're going to come back and we're going to be running hard, I think, with the volatility again.
Hey, all of that combined, along with the idea that we may have bottomed earlier, or at least it looks like that's the case. Normally, we would have a lot of pressure on the market through about 50% of the harvest. As of last Sunday, at least, those numbers that you gave were 23 and 26, soybeans and corn. It doesn't look like we've got that much pressure on the marketplace. I guess we're finding homes for this. And if we spread the harvest out for a while now, with a delay of maybe 7 or 8 days, this seems like it might be pretty solid base building for the commodities. Is that right?
I think this is what we've been talking about between you and I several weeks in a row, and we've just needed the wheat underneath us. I will say, I can't remember being in this business, and especially living out here the last 5 years in the Western Corn Belt, seeing Central Illinois spot corn basis worse than what we see in places like Des Moines, Iowa, and Lincoln, Nebraska, and parts of the Dakotas. So I still go back to that issue of, do we really have a 181 yield out there, let alone what FC Stone put out, nearly 183 this week. And I really wonder about that, because we're zooming through the corn fairly quickly. And, it's harder to get through beans out here just because of the weather pattern. Most guys are switching back after lunch to get back to the beans, but the corn's running pretty fast and several clients are done at this point. So I really do think that this low mindset in the cash market and in the futures market is very much on the front burner here. If we can just tick a couple more boxes, and obviously one of those boxes is next Thursday, as we don't build the U.S. stocks of corn, and therefore the world stocks of corn, which are very tight, become a lot bigger deal. I wrote about this on the blog this week on the website. China's corn stocks to use ratios are the lowest since 2006. That's something to really watch for.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the leaders of the Farm Bill Conference Committee met Thursday and could have an agreement on some Farm Bill titles soon. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway has previously said there was not a consensus on any of the 12 titles in the bill. Following the meeting between Conaway, Ranking Member Colin Peterson, and Senate Ag Committee leaders Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow, he says progress is being made.
We agree that maybe we've got three titles that are getting really close, and let's go ahead and if we could get those closed out and show movement to the world that we're actually making progress, that would help. But the four of us, I believe, came out of that meeting ready to continue to work, ready to continue to, you know, lay the lash on our staffs to get the process moving forward. So my colleagues are sincere about moving this forward, and time will tell if each of us were being sincere in those comments.
On that note, the expectation had long been that the House's insistence on implementing new work requirements for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program would sink the whole bill, at least politically, that according to Politico, but deep differences between the two chambers on farm subsidies and other spending priorities have stymied progress as lawmakers have met over the past several weeks, so much so that SNAP has barely been a focus. At the heart of the current impasse is the bill's commodity title and how the farm subsidy pie will be divided up among regions of the country. Stabenow and Roberts oppose House provisions that the CBO projected would send more cash to farmers in the Southern Plains, including more than $500 million to cotton growers, a top constituency in Conaway's West Texas district. This is something that you can read more about on the University of Illinois Farm Doc Daily website. Look for articles by Jonathan Kappas and Gary Schnitke. Of course, we talked about this yesterday with Gary on the Closing Market Report. Speaking of which, yesterday morning, I had the opportunity to catch up with Agriculture Conference Committee member Congressman Rodney Davis of Illinois and asked him about all the money flow and how it looks to be changing and what his thoughts were as we move forward.
Well, I'm always concerned if there's something that's going to adversely affect our producers. Remember, the Farm Bill is a balanced bill. Our producers have enjoyed risk management tools that have been very good to them in making sure that they're able to hedge the risk that they make every year when they invest their life savings in seed, put it in the ground, and hope they get enough rain and sunshine to be able to harvest it. Hopefully then they grow the yields that they were expecting, and then they've got to have a market for those products. So that risk management backstop has been very good to our farmers in that revolutionary 2014 farm bill that Adam was talking about. But keep in mind, these provisions aren't negotiated yet. There's nothing in law because we don't have an agreement. So I'll hesitate to comment on what impact something may or may not have on our farmers until I actually see what the final agreement's going to be.
And that may take a while. The bill will not be voted on before the November midterm elections, as the House of Representatives is on recess. The 2014 Farm Bill expired at the end of September. And finally today, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has hailed the new North American Trade Pact as a big win for U.S. agriculture. And like other ag groups, however, he thinks the negative impact of retaliatory tariffs on U.S. producers is stepping all over the good NAFTA news, or otherwise known now as the USMCA. We do know that it has some dampening effect, he says, on the benefits for agriculture in this agreement, so we look forward to that being resolved very soon. Perdue said of the duties, major trading partners like China, Canada, and Mexico have stuck tariffs on U.S. agricultural goods in retaliation for President Donald Trump's duties on steel and aluminum. U.S. trade officials are talking about a tariff resolution with Canada and Mexico, separately from discussions related to the North American Trade Pact, which leaders intend to sign late next month. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Time now to check in on the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass joins us from Agrible. Eric, I take it that we'll have a bit of rainfall here in the Midwest.
So Todd, yeah, already in the overnight hours, we had quite a bit of soaking rain across parts of Illinois. And throughout the morning here on Friday, we saw some of that precipitation retreating a bit to the north. And that's just really the first big push of heavy rains that we're going to be seeing over the next several days. So the overall pattern is what's not breaking down. And that features a huge ridge over the southeast United States. It's very, very warm there compared to average. And that ridge is practically immovable. And that's because the whole jet stream is really blocked up, starting all the way over in Japan, honestly, coming all the way over to the southeastern part of the United States. And what's really making for the inclement weather is the deep trough that is over the western United States. So between a deep trough, like we have, one we have over the west, and the ridge over the east, there's a battleground. It's a temperature battleground, it's a moisture battleground, and basically all it means is we have a focal point over which we're going to lift a lot of air into the atmosphere, and that's what gives us showers and storms. So nothing is slowing this down. It's just going to continually basically rain between Texas panhandles, in Oklahoma there, getting into parts of Kansas, over to Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, southern Minnesota, Wisconsin, northern Illinois. In fact, when I look at all of it, maybe the only places that stay a little drier than average in the Corn Belt over the next 10 days would be maybe southern Illinois, southern Indiana, southern Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky. But outside of it, it's just going to be a soaker. So this is really having an impact on harvest efforts this time of year. So also, the whole Corn Belt is divided. We have the southern and eastern parts of the Corn Belt very, very warm for this time of year, and the northern parts very cold, and that's where I get concerned. You see, I will be watching one major system. This is the one I'm really focusing on here that will be emerging out of the Rocky Mountains on next Tuesday. So again, we've got chances for showers and storms every day between now. But next Tuesday, that is the day that I'm getting concerned about, because that the track of that low and the upper level support that it will have will make this a monstrous cyclone, a big, big, big one. And as it goes up north, so it's going to basically take a trajectory from about Colorado and then head toward Minnesota, Wisconsin. We're going to have enough cold air on the backside of this that we could see some big time snows in parts of the Dakotas and Montana, and certainly southern Canada. The meantime, south of that thing, now this will be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week, we're going to have probably a pretty large episode of severe weather that will stretch along the cold front draped to the south of that low pressure system. Add to all of that, the tropics are back being active again. We are watching right now two areas in the western tropical Atlantic. So one right now in the Caribbean, one that's just going to be over there by the Bahamas. The one in the Caribbean has got me a little more concerned because it's supposed to get into the Gulf of Mexico and potentially come there into the southern part of the United States. And that's just another mechanism by which we can transport moisture into the Corn Belt. And then Sergio's out in the eastern Pacific. It is forecast to eventually get into the Baja of California, and then its remnants go through the four corner states, and it could help, well, signal another, start off another big extra tropical cyclone, a big low pressure system that goes across the Corn Belt. So saying all this pretty fast, but the thing here is that we are looking at a very, very wet harvest time period in the near term. Now, there is some indication that the whole thing might break down around mid-month. So I'm talking 12 to 15 days from now. We could finally see that deeper trough push off, but there's too much uncertainty in that given the tropical activity both in the eastern and western Pacific, which of course, those things impact the flow of our jet stream. So let's just keep this on the 10-day horizon, but kind of have the idea that we may be turning cooler mid to end of the month with that trough finally dislodging out of the west and moving into the Midwest. So there's a lot going on in terms of very active weather having a major impact on harvest right now. All right, so if we turn our attention quickly to South America, the big story over the next 15 days is that the weather systems that have been going through Argentina recently, we've got a bit of a pattern change down there. And the translation of all that is Argentina looks to carry a bit of a dry bias going forward here. Now, remember, they had been wet up to this point. Where has it been really wet in South America? It's been in southern Brazil. So we're talking about Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, and then getting into Uruguay and Paraguay. And so these locations, you know, this is great early season rain. This is what they would want to be seeing because it's not yet flooding, at least from the reports, what I've been able to see, but it's good early season rain. And unlike last year, the Brazilian monsoon is right on time, in fact, a little early. So this is leading to a very rapid start to the planting season. And where that has an impact is not necessarily with the soybeans, although it's good to get them planted early in South America as well, but it's going to be with the safrinha crop, the second crop, usually a corn and cotton crop. The Brazilians don't want to delay that, the planting of that crop. And if we get in early with beans, we get in early with corn too. And all that points toward relatively a favorable start for the South American growing season. But with El Nino brewing, we're going to have to watch very closely what happens in northern Brazil. And I'm talking about Mato Grosso as we move throughout this growing season. So we have got a lot to watch globally in terms of grain production right now with weather risk.
Eric, thanks so much. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible.